Stay in touch with us on Facebook and Instagram at Unique Yet Connected.
You are now listening to the 41st episode of Unique Yet Connected podcast. The theme for this episode is the doomed codependent puppeteer. Hello, brilliant souls in and around the world. Nolita Kozo Fenton is my name and Dolokas is my clan name. And this is episode 41. A warm welcome to Unique Yet Connected podcast, where we treat our episodes as mini workshops so we can best share the wisdom of systemic family constellations. Thank you for joining our movement of translating this wisdom into a practical language that all of us can easily understand, and most importantly, implement in our daily lives. The theme for this episode is the doomed codependent puppeteer. Remember, when you comment, ask questions, like and share our links and content, you help us grow together. And there wouldn't be a podcast without you, myself, Nick, Kinga, and the ones who came before us, as well as Belle Tellinger, the founder of the work that is most fulfilling for Kinga and I. And as always, Kinga is on the other side of the virtual. Hi, Kings.
Thank you, Noli. Hello, dear listeners and co-editors. Yes, dear listeners, keep sharing this knowledge because it can change lives for the better. Thank you for your contribution in helping us to be chosen into the top 10 South Africa family podcasts by Feedspot. You are our inspiration in building and opening up the theme about the laws of love and romantic relationships. Please continue to share your questions, comments, and insight on uniqueyetconnected@gmail.com and on WhatsApp 076-289-6670. Join our monthly virtual connection circle every last Tuesday evening of the month. To receive your link, subscribe on our website, www.uniqueyetconnected.com, or check for updates on our socials at uniqueyetconnected.
Or they can simply drop us a WhatsApp message so we can share the link with our listeners or your friends. Again, our WhatsApp number is 076-289-6670. We are still opening up the signs of codependent behavior. A lot has come up for me, and I've been unraveling for the past few episodes. It's another year, and I'm still processing, and I think I'll continue to process even after we finish the codependent phase. Dear listener, if you need support in any way during your processing time, remember we are here for you. And you can also book a constellation session if you need to get to the root cause of what's bothering you. Right, Kings?
Yes, we are definitely here for you. And you can contact us on whichever channel suits you best, via our website, email, WhatsApp, or drop us a message on our socials and we will respond back to you. We are here to answer your questions in the best way we can. Now, let's come back to the episode. More than probably, already know this if you have listened to the previous episode about codependency, but maybe today is your first time you're listening to us. And that's why we would like to repeat it, that we have established in the previous episodes that people can exhibit codependency in different ways and at varying levels. And in this episode, we will carry on reading through and discussing the list of the signs of codependent behavior by Erica Swindle. We're also running a little exercise while we're doing this. And we already started this in the previous episode to assess our level of codependency by the criteria of whether this feels very much like me, or a little bit like me, or not at all like me. You can scale them between 1 and 10, 1 being not at all like me, and 10 exactly like me. You can pause the podcast and bring your notebook if you haven't already done so, and let's start to work on this list. So we will read through, again, the list and some signs of the codependent behavior.
I know, I'm so eager. So let's continue to measure ourselves, dear listener. My pen and paper is already here. Let's all fill into what comes up as you go through the episode. Let's take it away, Kim.
Yeah, so here they come. Lacking boundaries between yourself and others. Blurring lines in relationships, you struggle to see where you end and the other person begins. Feeling low self-esteem. Fearing rejection and abandonment. We have already worked through these points in episode 35. And of course, you are welcome to go back to the episode and listen to them. Then in episode 36, we looked at apologizing or accepting blame to avoid conflict. Being who someone else wants you to be. Ignoring your own needs. Putting other people's needs before your own. Anticipating and reacting to someone else's needs, which may be perceived accurately or not. It took us two episodes to crack this one, episode 37 and 38. Episode 39 was about feeling like you have lost your sense of self. And in episode 40, we still carried on exploring this. So what do we have left on our list? Needing to control, including making decisions for others or managing them. Doing things for people that make you feel uncomfortable just to make them happy. Taking on too much. Basing your mood on how someone else feels, not your own emotion. Resenting, not receiving appreciation for your actions.
Yeah. That's quite a list, dear listener. So this next one is very common. Either we all have it at different levels, or if almost all of us have the experience on some other level. What I know is that control makes me uncomfortable. Let's open needing to control, including making decisions for others or managing them.
Thank you. The scary and demanding world outside needs to be controlled. To be made at least a little bit safer. There could be even a belief that the others are too careless and need your input to make them safe.
To me, it feels like it's automatic for parents to practice control with their children. And we also disguise this behavior with protecting the ones we love, you know, and it is mostly out of love. And I'm very interested in measuring myself in this one. Please give us some questions. And just before you do that, what I've also realized is that people who are obsessed with controlling everyone trigger me.
Okay, so questions. Let's look at, what does making mistake mean for you? Do you try to hide it when you make a mistake? Do you punish yourself when you make a mistake? How about, if you allow others to make mistakes, do you allow yourself to make one?
Those are a lot of questions, King. So let's start with the first one. What does making a mistake mean to me? It means to learn and to grow. And I had to grow to get to that meaning as well. So I used to be ashamed of making mistakes. I associated making mistakes with negative words, such as foolishness, stupidity. So it's been a challenging journey. And on question two, do I try to hide it when I make a mistake? Not anymore. At some point in my life, I would be embarrassed and humiliated. And at this point, I'm not quite sure because I haven't had an embarrassing or humiliating experience. It could be that I haven't made mistakes I consider as big mistakes. Let me say maybe I've been making small mistakes, so they feel safe. Therefore, I'm not hiding them. On question three, do I punish myself when I make a mistake? I'd say these days, I embrace making honest mistakes. I still don't think I punish myself when I make careless mistakes, but I do get disappointed with myself. Maybe the disappointment is the punishment. I don't know. So moving on to question four, do I allow others to make mistakes? To a certain extent, I'd say I do. However, I get irritated when the consequences affect me. Question five, the last question is, do I allow myself to make a mistake? I don't think I fully allow myself to make a mistake because I still think there are careless mistakes that one shouldn't make. Honest mistakes is when I genuinely didn't know better. When I genuinely didn't know better, I'll be kinder to myself. But when I should have known, that is a careless mistake to me. Then when I should have known, I don't think I'm that kind to myself at all. So I don't know why I chose to do this. You know, like in terms of when I do make that mistake, I'll be asking myself, why did I choose to do this when I knew better?
What I heard while I was listening to you, that careless mistake for you is when you didn't do your best. Like when you knew better, yet you went along with something, maybe to avoid conflict, I'm just guessing. Or when you feel that you didn't put enough effort to get all the information you needed to make a well-informed decision and ended up making an unnecessary mistake. Is this what you mean by careless mistake? I'm just trying to put it together in, you know, in my mind, what is happening inside.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yes, and that's what I meant. So adding to that, let me give this example. So when someone asks for a favor and I just quickly say yes, you know, without putting anything into consideration, what it means, check my schedule, or all of those things, right? But later I realized that I should have said no, but I've already said yes. So I would be like, this is so careless, because why did I say yes so quickly? I didn't allow myself to think about, you know, what I needed to think about or to think things through for myself. So then I would remember that I've done this before and I know what the consequences of it are. So yet I said yes. And now this mistake, that is a mistake for me, because now I'll be in a situation. I can no longer say to that person, no, I don't want to do this because I've said yes. You know, so I'll be like, you knew better, but you still didn't do better.
Yeah, I think I start to understand you. And it feels like that this links in quite a bit with another point on the list, which is coming later, which is doing things for people that make you feel uncomfortable just to make them happy. Yeah, saying yes and doing things just to make the other one happy instead of saying, let me take my time before I make my decision. Or at least this is what I'm hearing. But please correct me if I'm wrong. And thank you for this, because this is going to be a real pearl to look at when we are working with this point later.
Okay, thank you. Yes, that's what I meant. So I'll note that as well.
I was wondering, what happened to you when I was reading the sentence, needing to control, including making decisions for others or managing them?
Oh, wow. It definitely didn't sound that could be me. One thing for sure. So, because I thought, no, I'm not that extreme. So I don't make decisions for other people. I don't manage other people. So no way, you know. It doesn't relate to me at all.
Do you feel that you need to control others and make decisions for them or manage them in some ways? How do you experience when someone is trying to control you? Just to put it a little bit more in content, the level of control can be on different scales. On a lower level, we might micromanage others, but it can get to the level of dominating others' lives, making all the decisions for them.
Yeah, so what I know for sure is that when I sense or sniff that someone is trying to control me, I run or rebel. And now that you are talking about control, I'm thinking, is there a healthy control, Kings? You know, that's my question to you. And Is it allowed to have a little bit of healthy control? And what if someone is a careless driver and you are in the car and you feel like your input is required for the safety of everyone? Can that be healthy control? And also, just to get into my past, I've also realized that in my past relationship, where I have felt that my ex was not going to make the best decision because I knew he wasn't capable. And in brackets, I know that you're going to say, according to me, yes. So because of my past experience with them, I felt like I needed to control the situation, you know. So that need to control would just arise. And I wanted to control so that I can feel safe. Things like making sure that the bank account is safe, especially with somebody who's proved themselves reckless when it comes to money. You know, my experience with him was that as soon as he got paid, he would go on an overspend drive and forget about the basic priorities. And according to me, that was like, you know, a no-no. So then in order to protect our financial wealth, being, I would find myself moving money around, you know, hiding money, and just to create a sense of peace, you know, within me, peace of mind in inverted commas, because it really didn't bring me peace. So my control was both for safety and for my peace of mind. Now, trying to answer our question, it didn't really bring me peace at all. Because then we would fight because he felt controlled and didn't want me to move the funds, you know. So there was financial stress, there was emotional stress in the relationship.
We definitely make decisions for our small children. As they grow, we should involve them more and more in making decisions about their own lives. We talk about how it is better for children's development if you give them a little responsibility from an early age, but never more than it is appropriate for their age. Even when they are small, they can make small decisions about their day. A 3 years old can decide if she's gonna wear her blue or red skirt, but they are not equipped to make life-altering decisions, like to decide which school they're going to go to, if they are going to school at all or stay at home with the caretaker. These are not decisions that a child should make. But, Noli, we are obviously mainly talking about control between adults. And this is a delicate topic, as we just heard from you. Let's say, is it okay for you to hide the car keys from someone who is drunk and wants to drive, like in your example? Because in a certain way, this is also managing and controlling that person's decision. The really difficult question we have to ask ourselves is, where does our responsibility lie? Where does it stop and where does it start? When you care for your partner and you care for the people around you and inhibit them from doing what they want out of concern for their safety, is it controlling their lives or looking after them? How can we avoid becoming extremely controlling? Not to get there when we would like to make a decision for our loved ones or employees, if it's a business, on every little thing. And actually, with the stress you mentioned, it made me think of if you happen to marry a cheater and you try to control his cheating, check his phone, smell his clothes, but it all will be for vain because this is his character and only he can make the decision to stay faithful. And no amount of controlling will stop him before he made this decision for himself. And I think this is a good example because we all know this. We all have seen it and experienced it, if not in our life, then in someone very close to us. And this control doesn't bring in the safety we hope for, but only an enormous amount of stress.
Yes, that is so true. It's a lot of work And oh my gosh, now that you are giving this picture, it actually is quite a handful and very stressful when you're trying to control someone else in that kind of way. Where does our responsibility lie? Where does it stop and where does it start? That's what you say. And I hear you loud and clear. I feel that those questions can be helpful. Usually in a relationship, one gets affected by certain decisions that this person is making or taking, especially when we are married or staying together or sharing a life together as partners. So when one's actions or decisions affect your life, where do we draw the line, Kings? I mean, you know?
Systematically, as you know, we look everything in the view and in the light of a system, not as an individual. Systematically, if you have a partner who is not good with money, or it might be more truthful to say, as you said, according to you, he's not good with money and he must be controlled, you would like the financially responsible partner, which is understandable. But if you don't allow him to grow up, he is never going to learn to become responsible with the finances. On the other hand, maybe you have already tried to let him handle finances and he made a mess of it. So what can you do? Because you also have to protect yourself. My advice is that you should not get into a marriage in the first place with this person, not because of his character or whatever. Financial stability is important for you. Conservative spending is important for you. You don't want to end up, you are responsible for his financial decisions and he ends up resenting you for it. Not to marry a person whose values are so far from yours might sound very harsh. I know this sounds not extremely harsh, but only make decisions when you are willing to take responsibility for your part in what happened. Marrying a financially irresponsible partner was your decision. And the answer is not that you have to control the bank account. Obviously, look after yourself even before the marriage and marry out of community with your cure or without. Run separate bank accounts. If you work in the same business, then the business must pay a salary to both of you into separate accounts and create a mutual account for household expenses. Everyone must put in their share, and if he has nothing left in his account, then he has nothing left in his account and it is his problem, you know, as long as the mutual one is looked after. That could be one solution, you know, if you happen to marry, because we often do that, we're young, we get married, we don't know yet. But we fall into the trap of trying to control our surroundings so often because this control makes us feel that even if life is unpredictable, with my control, I'm able to make it as predictable as possible. And when you choose a partner, before you commit to them, have a look at how much I can trust this person. Do I trust him enough so I can let go of my tendency to control everything and everyone around me? And thank you for being so honest, and you really took us to an important point here. Know thyself. Measure up what is important for you and choose a partner accordingly. This way, you can avoid disappointment in your partner and the need to control him falls away.
So thank you to you too. You know, you make it easy to open up. The person who know themselves that they have control tendencies, in some cases, you won't know who you are, like the kind of person you are, unless you've observed how you behave, whether it is in friendships or family relationships, so that you can know that, you know what, I am controlling, or there are things that I cannot stand, or where your control is, because some people could be controlling in one thing, money, and then others could have control issues in how people around them behave around them or express themselves around them, or it could be control of how do people relate with other people in relationships, you know? So there could be different kinds of control. And I like that because we always look at something as one and then not look at it in different categories and forms of life that it can come into. So that's the insight I'm feeling here, you know, and in this episode. And I'm glad that I can now maybe think that way about myself. You know, maybe I didn't think I was controlling because I was looking at control in one aspect and not looking at control in all the other different aspects of my life. So I am controlling in certain areas for sure. I'm moving on to the trust question. Yes, it is very important to ask, you know, I love that. How willing am I to trust this person to let go of my control? And I don't remember asking myself that question in my younger life and even in my current marriage. So maybe it's still a worthwhile question to ask, you know, especially with the things that you go through with the person. So I must always remember to say, am I willing to trust Sisa in this situation to let go of my control?
When we are young, we often confuse trust with fidelity. He will not cheat on me. As you said, that we look at it as one big thing.
Yes, you are right. That was about the only trust I considered.
Only later, we realize that trust goes much deeper. If he is going to be there for me when I'm sick, or with money, as you mentioned, I was thinking while you were talking just how important is not to get disappointed to you. How much does this apply to me? Like, what is my relationship? Do I dislike getting disappointed by people? What is disappointment really? And I believe disappointment is rooted in expecting a certain behavior or reaction from the other. And there is a certain way or a way we assume it should be done, and then they do it differently. And suddenly we feel disappointed in them.
Yeah, disappointment. You know, I've just realized in the past few months that disappointment is such a big thing, you know, and we would always say, no, I'm just disappointed, you know, as if it's a little thing. Yes, trust does go much deeper. So I used to say this life is like a business and even relationships in a way. So then at some point in my life, I got a backlash about that. So the person I was with then said, this is a relationship, not your business. Don't run me, you know. So to me, it made a little bit of sense to treat a relationship like a business to a certain degree, I must say. So it also felt like if we were communicating better, a lot of things wouldn't be so much of a factor, but we find it difficult to communicate. So the questions you raise don't happen, and our expectations of each other are not communicated even when we need to. So we usually don't say what we really need to say to each other, or maybe we just don't know what to say to each other because we haven't explored ourselves, like you said earlier, know thyself.
Okay, so the way I see it, in relationship, these things you were talking about just now, you know, we could categorize them as tasks. These are not the core aspirational goal of a relationship. The goal is to love each other and be partners to each other in good times and bad times, to get through difficult times together. About all the other things, if you expect that your partner, that they should have the same importance that they have for you, the priorities should be the same. For example, to save money so we can move quicker into my dream house or get the car I want quicker. It should be a priority for my partner. That is just calling for the possibility to get disappointed in our partner. And in a situation like this, we often end up thinking that our partner doesn't love us anymore. If they would love us, they would also do everything that they can to get what I believe is the most important thing in our life, to achieve this, whatever is this. In this way, we often lose track of what is the real purpose of a relationship, to love someone. It is obviously always a delicate balancing act when we happen to be partners in love and in business, like you mentioned now. Business can't be the main purpose of a personal relationship. So I suppose I'm a little bit agreeing with your partner, your ex-partner, because business is based on numbers and profit. The relationship we have with this person as a lover should be completely different than the partnership in business. They fall under a totally different laws of connection.
Wow, maybe we need to have an episode on business partnerships with your partner in life as well, or husband and wife. So you always have a way of putting things into new perspectives and light. So yes, that makes so much sense. The goals are different. The goal is to love one another in a relationship. So that's something to remember daily. I'm afraid our time is up for this episode, and we still have so much more to open up on control as a codependent behavior. Please do share this episode. It might help the next person. And Tinga, what are we doing in the next episode?
You took us to love and control in relationships, so we're going to explore that further. Dear listener, I don't know if this episode touched you, and if you feel like you are experiencing these limiting patterns or relationship issues and would like to have an individual session, book a family consultation session with us on our website, www.unique.connected, or on our socials, Facebook or Instagram. Our handle on both platforms is @uniqueyetconnected.
Thank you for listening to our 41st episode. And another big thank you to Nick Mons from That Guide Productions for making us sound fabulous and on point. Our 42nd episode is in 2 weeks' time from now. Tune in on the 17th of March, 2024 at 10 a.m. South African Standard Time. We look forward to hearing from you. Be part of our conversation, like our pages, and engage with us on Facebook and or Instagram @uniqueyetconnected. Unique spelled YOUNIQUE. Stay unique, stay connected, and remember, you are one of a kind. We can only create a really meaningful podcast together. Siyabulela, khosono.
Bye bye. Thank you.